Welcome to Episode 9 of Working Title Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Paul Kane, and today I'm speaking with teacher, motivational speaker, and author Satiqua Johnson. Her latest novel, And Then There Was Me, came out in April. We discuss her books and her tips for writing engaging characters, public speaking, packaging your brand, and more. Enjoy! But first, this important message. In my writing life, my favorite time of year is October. That's when James River Writers holds its annual Writers Conference right here in Richmond, Virginia. Hundreds of attendees from across the country and even around the world come to this two-day event. Writers of all levels and backgrounds looking for a welcoming, friendly, inspiring, educational, and fun experience will find it at the JRW Conference. You can also sign up for one-on-one sessions with agents who are looking to build their lists. Registration is now open with an early bird discount. Visit jamesriverwriters.org to learn more and to register. Hope you can make it, and if you do, come find me and say hello. For joining me. Appreciate it. I wanted to start with your latest book, which I have not yet read. What's the title?
It's called And Then There Was Me.
And that came out last month, right?
Yeah, April 11th.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
You want to give a synopsis real quick?
Oh, yeah, sure. So And Then There Was Me, it's my third novel. And it takes place in New Jersey. As you know, I recently relocated to the Richmond area about 2 years ago. So most of my books take place in New Jersey, which is where I just come from. But And Then There Was Me is the story of Bea and Awilda. They've been best friends since forever. But Bea actually suffers from self-esteem issues, and she also has a secret addiction, food addiction, that comes out in the story that no one knows, and it's kind of stress-induced. She's in a situation where it seems like she has everything. She lives in a very posh neighborhood, and her kids go to the best schools, but on the inside, she's just all broken up. Her husband cheats on her. He's an habitual cheater, and she just can't seem to get her life together. She feels almost like she's a doormat for her family. And so the story is about a woman who really has to kind of strip down to her lowest point and figure out, is this the way she wants to continue with her life, or does she want to make the heart changes? And so there's a lot of ups and downs and twists and turns in the story. And when people read it, I just hope that they can really identify with the characters. And if there's something that I touch on that's happened in their lives, I hope that the book gives them some sort of healing. I'm very proud of it. It's been getting a lot of play.
And what has been the feedback you've been getting? Has it been helping women who read it to feel more secure in themselves?
A lot of women who read the book told me, one, that it's a real page-turner. Because there's a lot of issues. There is she moves into a neighborhood that's not very diverse, and so they have to deal with that, and there's the eating disorder and the infidelity and just the family drama. And a lot of people have said that they could either see themselves in the story, or they felt like they was hearing the story from a friend. So that the characters were very relatable and entertaining, but also engaging in educational.
Excellent. I read your prior book, Second House from the Corner, which I loved. It was really well done.
Oh, thank you.
From chapter one, it was amazing. Motherhood, just the secret thoughts a mother has that she would dare not speak aloud to her children.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me crazy to think what my mom might have thought, years ago.
Oh, yeah.
But in that book, sounds quite different than your lead in the latest book. In the prior book, Felicia?
Felicia.
She seemed much more confident together. She knew what she wanted. She seemed to have the perfect life. So how was writing that character versus Bay? Did I say Bay or B?
B. I call it B. Because it's B short for Beatrice.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do like writing strong women characters that have to kind of strip down to their bare bones and kind of build themselves back up. So Felicia is different because she is a little bit more together, a lot more together than B, and she's a lot more settled in her life and in her place. But there's always going to be some sort of demons that my characters have to face. I like when they have to kind of go back to some point in their lives and untangle something that they've kind of left to the side. And then as they figure it out and untangle it, they can move forward in the story. So they're all, you know, I don't know. They're all characters that I think people could just see themselves in. And really, that's what I go for. But just in different ways. I think Felicia and Bea are very different, but they have some similarities as well.
Mm-hmm. And in that book, Second House from the Corner takes place partly in Philadelphia, which I understand you grew up there.
I did, yeah.
As well as I did. I think we had that talk.
Yes.
But what was it like for you growing up in Philly, and how did that fold into the story for you?
Yeah, Philadelphia actually was, I can't even say it was a great experience because I didn't know anything but Philadelphia until I moved away to college. I actually went to college in New York City. So all of my life was spent in Philadelphia. And so just living a city life to me was just kind of normal. And there are a lot of characters when you live in the city. Now kind of living out in the suburbs, I almost feel like my kids are missing out on that experience. You know, it's trade-offs. You get city and you get, like, vibrant and diversity and culture. But then also you're really exposed to all types of people. I mean, crazy things can happen on the subway that you wouldn't be accustomed to if you're just driving a car. So, you know, growing up in the city, I think, really kind of made me who I am. And writing about Philadelphia was very, very satisfying. For my first novel, Love in a Carry-On Bag, that book took place between New York and D.C., so I didn't get to write about Philadelphia. And I think I was almost afraid, a little bit afraid, to write about where I was from. And so Second House from the Corner really gave me the freedom to go back down memory lane and revisit streets and ride through neighborhoods that I hadn't seen since I was a kid. But it was very gratifying. And it's actually my favorite part of the book. Whenever I think about Second House from the Corner, my favorite scenes in the book took place in Philadelphia.
Well, speaking of character, Daddy Gracious, I mean, what an amazing character. I felt like I was on the street cheering, wanting a sip of soda from him. Like, where does he come from? I could see him being a real person somewhere in South Philly.
Yes. My grandmother was such a good storyteller before she passed away. And, you know, she just would tell me stuff over the telephone. We would just talk on the phone for hours and just kind of, you know, like girlfriends. And she told me that when her and my grandfather first got married, when she was 17, they would go to a church called the Daddy Grace Church in South Philadelphia. And she said they went purely for entertainment, not for any religious purposes or anything like that. And just because the whole thing was such a spectacle and so entertaining. So she said they would sit in the back of the church and just watch the performance of Daddy Grace. And I just couldn't get that story out of my head. Every time I talked to her, I kept saying, Mom, tell me again what happened, you know. And she described, I mean, some of those scenes in the book were vivid because it's what she told me with, you know, the long hair and the fingernails and the high heel boots and the soda can part where he would kiss a can of soda and give it to the kids. They would chase his Cadillac down the street. Like, all of that stuff was very rich and vibrant in her memory, and I just begged her for it. And I couldn't wait to put it into a story, and so it found its way into Second House from the Corner.
Well, I'm glad you did that. It was pretty amazing. And I would go to his church just for the entertainment.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, geez, that was really good. Now you wear many hats, and prior to writing, I guess you've done, or still do, you teach writing and meditation, and you've been a publicist, is that correct?
Yeah, so I started off my career, when I graduated from college, my first job was with Scholastic Books. I worked in children's publishing, and I worked as a publicist. And I worked on the first three Harry Potter books.
Oh, cool.
Before Harry Potter was the big phenomena that it was. I worked on those books and got to meet and hang out with J.K. Rowling a couple of times, which she's super duper sweet.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of other, like, Caldecott children's writers, Walter Dean Myers and Dave Pilkey and, you know, oh, Goosebumps, the author of Goosebumps.
R.L. Stine.
Ruby Bridges. And so it was kind of a pretty cool job because I was around books all the time. And it really is what kind of inspired me to start writing. When I left Scholastic, I went over to G.P. Putnam's Sons and I worked in the adult division. And there I worked on like some of the bigger New York Times bestsellers like Nevada Barr and Catherine Coulter, T.D. Jakes, Amy Tan. And so it was a little bit, the stakes were higher for me at Putnam and it was a lot more fast paced. But also at Putnam is where I start writing my very first book, Love in a Carry-On Bag. I would shut my office door every day at 4 o'clock and pretend like I was working on something really important. But that was really my writing time. So I wrote every day from 4 to 5 in the office.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Well, it's great. Great to have that experience if you want to be a writer.
Yeah.
It's very helpful.
Yeah, it was tricky because we had a shared printer. So I would have to bolt from my office whenever I printed pages from my manuscript. I would have to bolt from my office and try and get to the printer before anyone else so no one would know, you know, what I was up to.
That's funny. Well, that brings up a question I just thought of. Children's books, were there favorites you had growing up in that – any of them have any influence on your writing?
Oh, yeah. I lived in the library as a kid. I actually went to the library every Monday in the summers, and I would dress up to go to the library, and I had a special little purse that I kept my library card in. It was a big deal. And I would check 7 books out every Monday, and I would read a book a day, and then I would return the next Monday, and I did that for the entire summer when I was growing up. So the librarians knew me. They would pick books out for me. I just had a big reading appetite. Some of the authors that I loved was Joanna Hurwitz was one of my favorites, and Judy Blume was another one that I liked to read. And so I would just, you know, go and devour these books. I liked poetry. I read like the Sweet Valley High Girls and the Babysitter Clubs and all of those little paperback, you know, cushy books. But yeah, I read a lot as a kid.
Oh, wonderful. If only more kids dressed up and went to libraries.
You know, I have to like almost make my kids. So it's like, how are you my children? Like, how come you don't love the library like I did, you know?
That's right. Oh, my goodness. Do they even have library cards?
Yeah, well, we do. We do have library cards, and we spend more time there in the summertime. During the school year, you know, kids now are in so many sports, and activities are just so crazy. But over the summer, I'll be dragging them to the library.
Oh, good. All right. Now, when you were writing away in your office, did you ever think at some point that it would be a published book and that this would be your career? Or did you think it would just be a dream for a long time?
No, I actually thought, because I had the career in publishing, and I felt like I was pretty connected. I knew agents, I knew editors, you know, I knew people in the business. I just thought it was going to be very, very easy for me to finish my book and get a book deal. But that's not what happened. I left my job after I gave birth to my first child, and I had already written about 3 drafts of my first novel, Love in a Carry-On Bag. And I took it. I got an agent pretty much right away because, like I said, I kind of knew people from my profession.
Very helpful.
And, yeah, it was very helpful. And she took it to market, and she took it to the top 12 publishers. And one by one, every single publisher turned my book down.
Aww.
And so I was devastated. I was. So we ended up having to self-publish my first book just to kind of get my name out of there.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we did. Because one of the reasons why I couldn't get a deal was that no one knew me. I didn't have a Facebook page. I didn't have that social media presence. And that was about 10 years ago, or you know, 7, 8 years ago. And that's when social media really started to kind of make its way, you know. Mm-hmm. And they were only picking, you know, writers who had some sort of clout. And the only clout I had was that I had worked in publishing. But that wasn't enough. So I had to kind of start from the beginning and build myself up. And so that first book we self-published. And it worked out because I won the Phyllis Wheatley Award. And then from all of the, you know, things that I did with Love in a Carry-On Bag, I was able to get a 2-book deal for my next 2 books with St. Martin's Press.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Well, I guess that's heartening in a way that even with a leg up like you might have had, it's still a difficult climb to get published with a major.
It is not. And you know, the thing is I the first book actually took me 10 years to write to begin.
Oh wow! Oh.
So I always say, if I had known all of this, you know, when I started, I probably would have just got a job at the museum. I probably would have done this.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And I look forward to reading the next book because I really love Second House from the Corner.
Awesome.
Before I get into other questions, I have a reader question.
Okay.
From Robin Farmer.
Oh.
And she wanted to know if you had any tips on getting a book review in a national magazine such as Essence.
That's a good question. It's really the luck of the draw, I have to tell you. Both of my books, Second House from the Corner and Then There Was Me, was reviewed in Essence. And really, for me, it was because I had been a publicist, and I used to pitch books to the book editor at Essence. So he was familiar with me when I was on the other side of the business. It also helped that my agent and him were kind of friendly as well. So that when my book came across his desk, it was almost flagged. So for me, it was the luck of the history of having worked in publishing. I think just a regular tip would be just to make sure your package is as tight as possible. You want to have a really good pitch letter on some really nice stationery. You want to have a copy of your book, and you want to kind of wow them in that first paragraph of the pitch letter so that they want to open the book and consider reviewing it.
Oh, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you do that yourself, or do you have someone help you with that?
I have a publicist at St. Martin's Press, but because I have a background in publicity, they're very good about running everything by me first. So I read all of the pitch letters. I read all the press releases. I read the flap copy of the book and kind of tweak it where I think it should be. And then they usually take my suggestions. They're very sweet of trying to make it a partnership and using, you know, what I know and not kind of shoving me to the side and saying, you know, we're the professionals here kind of thing. So they're really good about working with me so that we can push the best, you know, product forward.
Very good. Now, you said, you know, you're unknown when you're trying to get your first book out. What did you do to build a brand of yourself? Like, how did you... Because I've seen, like, your website, I've seen your Twitter account. You have this, you know, it's synchronized, to, you know, aesthetically. Like, what is the Sadiqua brand, and how do you consciously come make it so?
So I think what I try and do is build around inspiration, because what I really want to do is inspire. You mentioned earlier that I used to teach a meditation class when I lived in Jersey, and I did. I'm all really about how can we be our best selves now, and what do we need to do, you know, as people? What do I need to do to be my very best, and how can I inspire everyone else? And so I really started from there of what can I say, what can I do that's going to inspire greatness in anybody who crosses my path. So I started with a blog, and where I did like a weekly blog with inspirational quotes and tips and stories. And then I would, then with my Twitter and my Facebook and my Instagram, I kind of tried to follow that so that you got the inspiration, but you also got a great novel to come along with it. So you almost... It's almost like you like what I'm saying, so you're going to want to read my book, because I'm kind of giving you a little bit extra to kind of pull yourself up as well, to kind of inspire yourself as well. So, you know, it was a process. In addition to, you know, what I had to do on social media, I really had to get out on the streets and kind of grind with that first book. Like, I was at every book festival up and down the East Coast that I could drive to. I remember going to the Harlem Book Festival when Love in a Carry-On Bag came out, and it was 92 degrees, Josh. If you've ever been to New York City in 92 degrees, you know that it's like standing in an oven, and it stinks. So I'm out on, you know, 125th Street at this book fair, you know, trying to look halfway decent, but I'm sweating all my makeup off and hand selling my book to every single person who walked by. And, I mean, that was pretty much my whole first year of promoting Love in a Carry-On Bag. I would set up a tent and go to any book festival that would have me, anyone that I could afford to pay for the table. You know, I was there. I was at the Baltimore Book Festival, and it was a three-day event. I was standing on cobblestone. When I got finished that weekend, I just felt like I needed to, like, go to the spa or soak in the tub because every part of my body hurt, you know.
Oh.
So it was a full-fledged blitz of a grind for that first year. Yeah.
And then how did the second book come about as far as getting a publisher? By that point, were you established as far as prominence and or you're still working on that?
I was still working on it. I think when I was writing Second House from the Corner, my agent, she's an agent editor, so she edits the books and she helps me as well. She kind of suggested that we should go back to the publishing houses with Second House from the Corner because, you know, we were thinking, okay, you know, we're self-published, so we're going to just keep going down that trail. But she said, no, I think they're ready to hear what you have to say. You've built something with this first book. And we can use that platform to try and get you a deal. So I got another team together, and we went out to the publishing houses. And actually, it was always my dream, because I came from publishing, that I really wanted to return to a big house. I didn't really want to stay self-published. So, you know, we put our packages together. I went to go visit some editors in New York City. And the wonderful thing is that when we submitted this book, Second House from the Corner, we got three offers from three major publishing houses that wanted to buy Second House from the Corner.
Oh, wow.
So I went from the girl who nobody wanted to publish to now having three deals in front of me. And, you know, we were able to really pick and choose who we wanted to work with on the next two books.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Quite a turnaround.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, yes. But it shows what hard work and dedication would do, you know, if you just stay the path, which is what I did. And I did it with laser focus. You know, I knew what I wanted, and I just kept going for it. You know, all the hardships, all the rejections, and all the standing outside begging people to buy my book, you know, I knew that it was going to add up to something.
Great. So now you can look back fondly on the cobblestones and the 92-degree heat. Does it pay off? Now, you mentioned that having a team. Who's on your team? Who helps you with your promotion and your sales and all that?
Yeah, well, St. Martin's Press has a pretty big team. So I have, you know, somebody in sales. They have people who are in the marketing department. So maybe two or three people in the marketing department, and then in publicity. I have a publicist and then her assistant, and then I have an editor at the house. And so that's all my St. Martin's Press team. And then my agent, I actually have two agents. How could I even be more lucky than that, Josh?
Embarrassment of riches.
Yeah, so I have two agents. Cherise Fisher actually does the editorial side of my agenting. And then Wendy Sherman does the back of the house, pitching the publishers and that sort of thing. And so they work together to agent me, which is really, really awesome. Because Cherise and I have been working together since Love in a Carry-On Bag. Really, our relationship is so codependent, I almost feel like, could I even write a book without Cherise? She is totally the midwife and the doula to my work. So I lucked up to be able to have both of them represent me. And then here in Richmond, Christy Tuck Austin does a lot of work for me. She's pretty amazing.
I just spoke with her today. She is a very wonderful woman.
She has, like, really helped me. And then there was me. Christy really has escalated my game. You know, she's helped me with my newsletter and keeping my blog and building a list, because really that's what publishers are looking at. When you go to them and say, I've written the next great novel, they're like, okay, well, who are you? So they want to see how many friends you have on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and what type of conversations you're having, and do you have a blog, and what does your photo look like, and are you marketable? So unfortunately, it's no longer about how well you write. It's really how many books can you sell? So, you know, she's been really great at helping me kind of cultivate that, and even helped me a little bit with some publicity. So I really do. I have a pretty awesome team behind me that's kind of pushing the train forward.
And you have a newsletter, right?
I do.
I think I subscribed to that balance.
Yes, you did.
Most recent,
yeah. You haven't gotten a newsletter yet? I'll have to make
Not
sure
yet.
You get one.
Yeah.
Okay, well, make sure you get one.
Thanks. But, so you have different channels of publicity. You've got the social media like Twitter, Facebook. You have your newsletter. You have your website. What do you find has been the most rewarding in one aspect of, you know, keeping in touch with your readers, but in another respect, that readers have responded in terms of buying your book? I don't know if they're the same thing or a different thing, because like on Twitter, you know, you have an instant connection, whereas mm-hmm. a newsletter, you know, you write something up, you send it out, it might be days until you hear back, if at all.
Yeah, it's hard for me to quantify where the book sales are coming. Mm-hmm. I also do a lot of touring. So
okay.
I will jump in my car and drive to North Carolina because the library has asked me to come and speak. And then I tap into book clubs that are local and say, could you help me bring people out to this event? So I feel like it's really a little bit of everything that is going to make you as an author successful. It's that I think in-person appearances help. Now, you don't want to spend $600 getting from the East Coast to the West Coast and you're not really sure if you're going to have more than five people there because no one knows you, you know?
Right.
So
right.
I really concentrate on building primarily on the East Coast. And mm-hmm. going places where I know I can tap into an audience, I can tap into a book club or relatives or friends or family, that sort of thing, to help kind of spread the word and get people to come out. But I think it's a little bit of everything. You know, having a constant social media presence, which when it's time for me to go in the writing cave, which is where I'm headed probably in the next couple of days, it's really hard to come back out and still talk on social media.
Right.
But that is part of it, you know, keeping your name on people's lips and keeping your product at their eyes and just reminding them and also having the conversation, not necessarily buy my book, but mm-hmm. like, this is what I did today. I also run, so people like to hear about how my training is going.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have three kids that are super duper active, so people like when I put pictures up and talk about, you know, riding in the car because I'm at, you know, my little one's soccer practice. So people want to be engaged with the whole person, not necessarily just buy my book. And so mm-hmm. that's the other thing that I think helps with the success of being, you know, a writer that people know, because they want to know you too, not just the product.
Right. I hear that often. They want to know you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever have a problem putting yourself out like that? Like, are you by nature introverted like many writers are, including myself, or have you always been outgoing?
Josh, have you met me? No, I am very outgoing. I was actually, so I went to college as a theater major because I started off wanting to be an actress. And I was convinced that when I moved to New York City, I went to Marymount Manhattan College as a theater major, that I was only going to be there for 2 weeks because I was going to get my big break so quickly that I wasn't even going to be able to finish college, that I would be off on Broadway doing some amazing work. Well, I got a college degree. That didn't happen at all. But I think I am a people person. I love talking to folks. And so, you know, it's pretty easy for me. Yes, to answer your question, it's pretty who I am. It's who I am.
So you have no problem standing up in front of an audience, like maybe reading an excerpt of your book, for example?
I absolutely love it. It gets my juices flowing.
Do you have any tips for those who might be less inclined to speak but must?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any public speaking tips you have for people
Absolutely.
Like me?
I don't do anything without a plan.
Okay.
So, you know, for instance, I spoke at the James River Writers for the Love and Hate. I did Love and Hate at the Literary Salon in February. And actually, that was pretty scary because I don't know about Love and Hate in a way that I could discuss it. So that was mm-hmm. pretty scary. So to get over the scariness of it, I sat down and I thought about what that really meant. There's a thin line between love and hate. And so I wrote myself a talk. I like wrote a talk out. And I also do things by the minute. So if I have an hour to speak, I'll mm-hmm. say from 7 to 7:10, I'm going to talk about this. And from 7:10 to 7:20, I'll talk about this. I really give myself like a diagram and a timeline so that when I get up there, I have something to fall back on if I draw a blank. So I say be overly prepared when you're speaking, particularly when you're not super comfortable with it. And I rehearse the sections of my novel that I'm going to read, and I always read the same section every time. So what I read in Second House from the Corner, I read that the whole tour. Anytime I read for Second House from the Corner, it's the same sections. And now that I'm reading from And Then There Was Me, it's the same exact section of the book. Okay. So every time it's going to get a little bit better because I'm familiar with the text and I've done it already. And so I don't change up, and I try not to reinvent the wheel. And I think that that will definitely help people who are a little bit shyer, is to practice, to plan, and to do it with a little bit of purpose.
How about keeping eye contact? I understand you want to look out at the audience. Do you have any tips for that? Because,
yeah,
you know, I'd rather look down at my feet. But.
Yeah. What I do is I kind of pick two or three spots in the room, like one to the right, one to the left, and one center. So either spots or people. And
okay,
I'll glance up from my work, and I'll just, every time I go right, I go center, I go left, I read. I go right, I go center, I go left, I go back to my reading. And you don't have to look up a lot, but you need to look up enough so that people are engaged.
Mm-hmm.
I also put a little drama into the reading. So when I'm reading dialogue, specifically, for Second House from the Corner, the section that I read is the very beginning of the book, where Felicia is overwhelmed and her kids don't want to eat dinner and she doesn't know what to do. And so when the kids speak, I actually try and change my voice a little bit so I sound a little bit more like a kid. So, like, I may talk like Felicia and I'll go like, Mama, this doesn't taste right. You know, and then that pulls the audience in because now they're like, oh, a kid is speaking, you know. So I try and bring a little bit of flair and drama to the actual reading.
Oh, do you have audiobooks? Because I was thinking just now that maybe you should do your own audiobooks.
Oh, I would love to do my own audiobooks. Second House from the Corner is the only one. That is the only book that has an audio version. And actually, when we sold the rights, they also sold the rights. So I didn't have the right to read the book. So they used one of their internal people. I think it's audible.com maybe. So whoever bought it, whatever audio company bought it, they bought the right to have their person do it. So I hear she does a good job. I haven't listened to it, but people who have listened to the audio said that it was pretty good, that she was spot on. But I would definitely enjoy reading one of my books going forward.
Oh, I hope that works out.
Yeah, me too.
Earlier we were talking about social media, and you go retreat into some room to do your writing and you turn off. How do you balance, you know, writing, doing what you really need to be doing versus marketing yourself? How do you know how much time to allot to each of them? Because like you said, if you're off the radar for a while, then you might be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep yourself front and center all the time. But then how can you write if you're doing that? So.
It's really, really tricky. I have to tell you, I haven't found the balance, to be quite honest. I disappear. And then my agent will say, Sadiqua, you need to come back. You have a book coming out. No one knows it. You're not talking to people. You need to come back. And so I slowly emerge. So I'm working on a fourth novel now, and so I have to kind of get back into it because I haven't really written in about a month since And Then There Was Me has come out. So I haven't figured out how to do it. What I will say is that when I am writing, what I try and do is give myself a time. And I'll put on some music. So if I say I have to write 1 hour without checking social media, because social media is a little bit addictive. And so I'll say I have to write 1 hour without checking my email because I could check my email every 30 seconds. I don't know why, Josh. I don't know who I think is going to email me, but I don't want to miss anything just in case it's important. So I tell myself, like, you have 1 hour. You have to sit here. You can't get up. You have to write for an hour. Once that hour is up, then you can check your email, check your social media, and then I'll go back for another hour or two. So I break it up in that way just so that I can focus, but also know that I'll have a little fun after I do the writing for an hour or for 2 hours or for 3 hours, and I know I'll be able to, like, see what people are talking about. But it's tough. I have to say it's a tough balancing act, particularly when you get deep into a novel where you really need to keep your eyes and ears and brain in their world, you know. It gets tricky. Definitely gets tricky. I hope I can figure it out better for the next go round.
Oh, well, let me know. Reading your social media, have you ever found inspiration from anything someone's tweeted at you or posted?
Yeah. No, I got some great people on social media. And it's so funny when you meet your social media friends, like at events and stuff, it's like the funniest thing. I have great people who are supportive, who always have a kind word, who is helping to promote me. Like, selling is word of mouth, and I have a lot of people who are really good mouthpieces for my work, and they definitely spread me along. And people know I like inspirational tweets, so sometimes they'll do an inspirational tweet and tag me on it, you know. But yeah, I have really great social media friends.
Okay, very nice. I'll wrap up with this. You know, you had mentioned earlier with JRW, we have the conference coming up in October, and I understand you're going to be a speaker there.
Yes. So I knew about JRW since I lived in New Jersey.
And really?
Yes. And for reason, I think I can't tell you how I know, but I always knew about JRW. And to be honest, it was one of my dreams to be at the conference. And so when I moved here 2 years ago, the first thing I did was say, I came to the writing show. That was my very first event. And I signed up. I got my membership right away. So that was my very first thing getting connected. I probably met you at my very first writing show.
Probably.
So I wanted to be connected. So last year I was here and I had another event during the conference. So I didn't even get to come to the conference last year.
Oh.
So I had an event in Maryland. So this year I was like, I'm clearing my schedule. I'm going to be at the conference. And then I was asked to speak. So it's almost like a full circle dream come true moment. So I'm super excited about that. Really, really excited.
Oh, I'm excited for you.
Yeah.
Do you know what you might be speaking on? Have they told you? Or?
They have not told me yet. And I think I think we'll probably brainstorm. My agent, Cherise Fisher, is also going to be speaking. So it would be awesome if we did something together, you know, just to talk about the process of going from self-published to traditional publishing house and what that's like, or what the editor author relationship is, and how we go back and forth, and how I write a book with her assistants. I mean, there's plenty that we could do if we did it together. But if we don't, you know, I'm open. I can pretty much talk about anything, Josh.
I don't doubt that. Oh, all right. Maybe you should do a writing, not a writing show, like a master class on public speaking. That'd be, I think, valuable.
Oh.
I would sign up.
Yeah. I just gave you all my tips, Josh.
Okay. Well, you got to reinforce it, then let me demonstrate and make sure I'm learning right.
Yeah. So. Okay. That's something to think about. Well, I am teaching a writing class. I didn't get to really touch on that when you brought it up
sure.
earlier.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I just started my actual first writing class in Richmond. It's called Pens Up, Fears Down. And it's really wherever you are, whatever you're writing, this class is for you right now. And so we're entering our third week tomorrow night, which I'm super excited about. And it has been amazing because I took workshops when I was writing Love in a Carry-On Bag. And they were so essential to me getting that first novel down, you know, kind of reading it out loud in a group and testing out pages and that sort of thing, that I've been wanting to give that back for a very, very long time. And it's scary to kind of step out and start, you know, a business. So I finally just said, I'm just going to do it. And hopefully someone will sign up and, you know, we'll just go from there. But it's been an amazing class so far. And, you know, I'm so glad I did it. And I'm learning from them and they're learning from me. And the energy is just, it's really, really good. I'm excited about it. And hopefully, you know, if all goes well, I'll run another session of it. The class meets for 6 weeks at a time. So hopefully, you know, I'll get enough interest where I can continue to run it every 6 weeks.
Oh, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, we'll sign off. How about where people might find you next? Do you have an upcoming book signing or other appearance?
So I'm at the Gaithersburg Book Festival on May 20th, which is just in a few days. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be speaking, I think, at 2:15. That's the closest event I have coming up. And then in June, I'm teaching a writing workshop at the Gum Springs Library in Loudoun County, and that's going to be a small version of my Pins Up, Fears Down, but it'll be a two-hour workshop as opposed to a six-week workshop. And then I guess I'll have a little time off in the summer unless, you know, something crosses my path. I need the time off to write this next book, so.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I'll be in the cave trying to get it done. But
best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you. And you can find me on my website, which
is... Yes, please, plug it.
Yeah, my website is SadiquaJohnson.net. And Sadiqua's SADEQA, SadiquaJohnson.net. My three novels are Love in a Carry-On Bag, Second House from the Corner, and Then There Was Me, which just came out in April.
Yay!
Yay!
Well, thank you for joining me, Sadiqua Johnson, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Yes, I'm sure I'll see you soon, but it's such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Yeah. Take care.
Thank you. You take care as well.